Welcome to the Buckmaster Show for Thursday, the 3rd of February, 2011. The big story today, the frigid weather, the record-setting cold temperatures in the teens in the old Pueblo. I've been here 23 years. I've never seen a colder morning than what we're experiencing here in Tucson. Unfortunately, lots of frozen pipes in Tucson this morning. We'll get an update from Tucson Water in a moment. I am Bill Buckmaster, your host for the Buckmaster Show on KJLL AM 1330 and always on the World Wide Web at buckmastershow.com. We're live weekday mornings from 9 to 10. The program re-airs from 7 to 8 p.m. here on KJLL. The lineup for today's show includes a newsmaker interview with the executive director of the Arizona Parks System. We will preview the upcoming Civility in Political Discourse Forum at the University of Arizona. We'll talk with financial planner Shelley Fishman, and then the Buckmaster Show legal contributor Don Luce will be joining us in studio. The Buckmaster Show is primarily an interview-driven talk show, but there is always room for listener comments and questions. Call us on the Buckmaster Show live line, 529-3508. My producer, the lovely and very talented Rosemary Brandt, will be happy to take your call. And we're going to begin this morning with that cold weather story affecting Tucson Water customers, including yours truly, unfortunately. Fernando Molina is on the phone, the Buckmaster Show live line. Fernando, how bad is the situation out there today?
Well, good morning, Bill. We're still trying to assess the extent of the problem. That from midnight till about 4:30 this morning, we did experience problems related to our system. So we had electronic control systems at our boosters and reservoirs that, because of the cold weather, malfunction, and that automatically shuts everything down to prevent any damage to any of the equipment that we have out there. Those were relatively easy responses, and because they happened in the early morning hours, a lot of our customers didn't even know what was going on. Things begin to change, and we never really know the extent of the problem until people start getting up and getting ready to go to work. So right now, we've got about 90 people of our crews, and we're responding to calls from customers to check out whether the problem is their personal plumbing. And we're also sending crews out to our facilities to inspect to see if there was any damage from last night, and also to make sure we're protected for cold weather again tonight.
Well, I have learned a lesson, I'll tell you, because the first thing we did, we got up, there was no water pressure. So we called the neighbors, and they said, oh, yes, we have water. Well, we left our faucets trickling. That's what the neighbors did. We didn't do that.
Yeah,
so right now, my wife is at home trying to pour hot water on some of the faucet areas outside to see if we can loosen things up. And I'm sure we are not alone.
No, our phone lines are very busy all throughout the utility. So what we're asking people to do is just be a little patient. We are trying to get to the calls as quick as we can. As far as how to deal with the situation if your personal plumbing is frozen, what we're suggesting is that you try and find the water line that comes into your home. So from your meter to your home, there's a water line buried underground. Typically, that line comes up right next to the foundation outside of the house and then goes into the wall. That's usually the culprit. So if you think you're frozen and you haven't protected your water line, you might want to slowly, and I emphasize slowly, try and melt any frozen plug that might be in there. And you also want to make sure that if you're doing that you keep a faucet open inside the house, because what you don't want is a big slug of water to come through once that ice thaws out.
Good
and
idea.
Burst any pipes.
Good idea. Fernando Molina from Tucson Water, you're going to have a very busy day. Thank you for some tips and for an update on what's going on. Thanks a lot.
Okay, glad to be here with you, Bill.
Okay, Fernando Molina from Tucson Water. The Buckmaster Show is brought to you in part by Flowers, Rieger & Associates Certified Public Accountants, located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com. Flowers, Rieger is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. The Arizona State Park System is close to collapse. So writes the Arizona Republic in a recent editorial. In recent years, the state has not only cut off all support from the general fund, but also raided park revenue. Joining us on the Buckmaster Show live line from Phoenix is Renee Ball. Ms. Ball is the executive director of the Arizona State Parks Department, a position she was appointed to in May of 2009. Prior to coming to Arizona, she served as director of San Diego County Parks and Recreation. Ms. Ball, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Bill.
What is the current funding situation facing our beloved Arizona State Parks?
Well, it's pretty slim right now. We have an operating budget of about $18 million, which is intended to operate our 30 facilities and provide grant programs, the State Historic Preservation Office, environmental education, and other things related to state parks. We should have a budget to operate all of our parks and do what's required in statute of about $30 to $34 million. So we're just over half of what we should have.
Of the parks we have, and correct me if I'm wrong, are there 34 state parks? Is that the correct number?
There's 30 state parks.
Okay, there are 30 state parks. Which parks are right now closed?
We have, the good news is, we have only three parks closed today. Without a plan to open, and that's Lyman Lake State Park up in St. John's, Oracle, which is down in your area, and then San Rafael State Natural Area, which has never been open to the public, and we don't have plans to open it right now. We have two parks that are closed today, but they have a scheduled reopening. One is McFarland State Historic Park in the Florence area, and we have a new partnership with the town of Florence, and that will open up February 12th. And then Homolivi Ruins State Park, which is up in the General Winslow area. It's an archaeological park. We have a new agreement, a brand new agreement with the Hopi Tribe. They're providing the funding to keep that park open, to reopen it. And we have a grand reopening that everybody's invited to on March 18th.
Now, the Arizona Republic, as you know, editorialized that the most promising proposal is to create a quasi-governmental agency to oversee the state's parks. The public would keep control over $150 million in facilities and infrastructure assets while tapping the flexibility and business practices of the private sector. What do you think of that that report, that study that was commissioned by the nonprofit Arizona State Parks Foundation?
I think there is a lot of opportunity, and as you and your listeners know, that the devil's in the detail in how an authority or quasi-governmental entity would be set up. It would certainly offer more flexibility, if written correctly, for public-private partnerships, but the real issue is the sustainable funding source, and without a sustainable funding source, it matters less what our organization looks like. So that's what we need, is a sustainable funding source in order to keep parks open and continue to be an economic driver in this state. When all of our parks are open, we have a total economic impact of $266 million statewide. And of that amount, a little over $20 million goes directly to our state general fund. This is when people come to a park. It's not what they pay at the park, but they go to the grocery store, they go out lunch, they fill up their tank with gas, those types of things where people are spending money because they're visiting a park. So right now, the State General Fund provides Arizona State Parks $0. There's no general fund support, but in return, our open parks generate $20 million that goes directly to the State General Fund. So a $0 investment for a $20-plus million return is pretty good in most people's books, especially today in these tough economic times.
It's coming up on 16 minutes past the hour. On the Buckmaster Show live line is Renee Ball, the executive director of the Arizona State Parks Department. Let's talk a little bit more in depth about this study and hit on some of the key points. One point, the private side of the equation could include both businesses and nonprofit groups. Privatization should focus on parks and services that offer enough revenue potential to provide profits for both the operator and the site. Now, one problem is that not all these sites, especially the historical and cultural ones, could generate enough revenue to be self-supporting. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So go into a little bit more on some of these study points. The legal, practical, and financial obstacles would restrict how much the parks could be privatized, correct?
Correct. And the main point is, as you mentioned, parks that have the opportunity for high visitation, high revenue potential, and minimal constraints are those where the private sector, the for-profit sector, would have the most interest. And right now, those parks that we operate that basically have high visitation and bring in the most money, we have concessions at them. There's certainly an opportunity to add more concessions. A concession could be anything from a gift shop, a restaurant, jet ski rentals out on the river, boat rentals out on some of our lakes, value-added services that the private sector can do, you know, better than we can. And we manage the park and they manage recreational facilities. But most of our land, two-thirds of the land that we manage, we, the state of Arizona, do not own. Most of it is federal land, either a patent or a lease from the Bureau of Land Management or the Forest Service. So it's not our decision, the state's decision, on what we can do on that land. It's the federal government's. So we have to work closely, and our patents and agreements often say that we will be the operator of these parks. So we're working through that, but it's not as easy as just turning something over. What the Parks Board wants to do, their number one priority, is to keep parks open and operating. And not only doing that, but increasing visitation, which would include these private sector partnerships, is one way to do that.
Let's talk about parks that are really working. Give us some examples of some shining examples of Arizona State Parks, perhaps maybe some of the crown jewels in our system. Which ones would you point to?
Well, I'd say they're all crown jewels, but in terms of economics...
some of the parks that really were, that are working well.
Up in the Sedona area, Slide Rock takes in a lot of visitors in the spring and summer and is a park that makes more money than it expends. Ditto with Karchner Caverns down in Sierra Vista, which is a pristine, living, breathing cave, and we have international visitors from all over. That's a big economic driver. Lake Havasu State Park up on the Colorado River has the biggest economic impact of all of our parks and certainly is a park where both the community makes money from people spending money and we make money there. And, of course, the beloved Catalina, which is just the most typical beautiful park that you can think of when you think of a state park out in Tucson. Camping, hiking, everything that you can imagine, and it remains to be a very profitable park as well.
Renee, correct me if I'm wrong, but the Picacho State Park, wasn't there a partnership that was worked out last year with the community there in the surrounding area and the state?
Yes, Picacho Peak State Park and eight other state parks are only open because we have community support, which generally or always is in the terms of money. It helps pay our operating loss. So at Picacho Peak, we had just a $20,000 operating loss, but we couldn't make that up with any other source, and we have limits to how much we can spend in our budget. So the community provided $20,000, and in return, the park has stayed open 7 days a week and provides a total economic impact of about $2.5 million annually to the local community. So what Eloy said and their partners said is it's worth $20,000 to us to continue this economic driver in our community. We had very similar contracts up in Alamo Lake with La Paz County, Jerome, with Yavapai County, that's a historical park that's reopened and doing very well. everything from Roper Lake, Tonto Natural Bridge State Park in Payson. We have partnerships with the town of Payson, the town of Star Valley, and the Friends of Tonto Natural Bridge, who have put in money, and that park now remains open and brings in over $3.5 million of local economic impact annually.
Well, that's good news, certainly. We have less than a minute to go, but I do want to point out that this is not a problem that is unique to Arizona. The budget crunch across America has devastated state parks in this country, so everyone seems to have a similar issue or issues. Nobody has a lot of money, and everyone has a lot of projects that need to do. Is that correct?
That's correct. And Arizona is in the forefront of finding solutions and building these public and private partnerships to keep parks open, because the state recognizes that we're an important economic driver. So we're the leader in that part of the industry.
And your budget, you say, will be coming out very shortly?
Yes, they will be considering the budget in the next few weeks, is what we expect the Appropriations Committee.
Renee Ball, thank you very much for talking with us about the crown jewels, really, in our outdoor activities here in Arizona, our state park system. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Bill.
All right. Renee Ball was with us. She heads up the Arizona State Parks. It's coming up on 22 minutes past the hour on the Buckmaster Show. We are on KJLL AM 1330. And please check out our website. If you missed a program, they're all archived at buckmastershow.com.
The Arizona Inn is the only Tucson hotel named by Travel and Leisure magazine as one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. Located in Midtown, close to the University of Arizona, the Arizona Inn is located at 2200 East Elm Street and on the web at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn maintains AAA Four Diamond status for both the hotel and dining room, with Chef Allison serving up breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily, with a featured menu and seasonal favorites. And because the Arizona Inn is listed on the National Register of Historic Places, founded by Arizona's first Congresswoman, Isabella Greenway, the Arizona Inn provides an historic backdrop for your next special event. Arizona Inn is the perfect setting for weddings, anniversary celebrations, or your next business meeting, and you can make your reservations online at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn, luxury and elegance in the heart of Tucson.
Sarnoff Artist Materials is your one-stop store for fine and graphic artist supplies, framing, stationery, and Mont Blanc and other top-of-the-line writing instruments. Order online at sarnoffart.com or visit owner-operator Henry Sarnoff and his store, staffed by artists, for artists, and those who seek the finest quality in everything art-related. Sarnoff Artist Materials, 2504 North Campbell, three blocks north of Grant, and always at sarnoffart.com.
Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero More, Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza, topped with the finest, freshest quality ingredients. Enjoy casual yet upscale dining while sampling our extensive boutique wine list. Vero More in Tucson at North Swan and Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veromorepizza.com. And coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastro pub.
About 25 minutes past the hour on the Buckmaster Show. The University of Arizona is promoting a week of civility, the week of February 14th on campus. Valentine's Week, that seems appropriate, doesn't it? One of the highlights will be a one-hour noontime discussion that I have the pleasure of hosting on civility in political discourse. Panelists will include former U.S. Senator and Arizona Regent Dennis DeConcini, former Tucson Mayor and UA political scientist Tom Volge. Professor Kate Kensky will be with us from the U of A School of Speech and Communication, and David Fitzsimmons, cartoonist and editorial board member of the Arizona Daily Star. Joining me in studio on the Buckmaster Show is Bruce Skolnick. He's one of the attorneys for the University of Arizona, and it was Bruce's idea, really, to come up with this discussion on civility. Bruce, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much, Bill, for having me this morning.
You know, when you first proposed this, and I think this was last, perhaps late November, you approached me about hosting this panel. I said it really was a great idea. I had just finished my time over at KUAT, and as you know, Bruce, I hosted so many of the political forums, and what I noticed over the years, in the some more than 20 years I had been doing them, that the tone became more and more vicious among the candidates. Had you been noticing something similar?
Absolutely, Bill, I had, and the university was like every other workplace, and during lunch hours and breaks, of course, there was a good deal of discussion about how we all disliked the harsh rhetoric, the harsh tone of the political discussion that was going on. And that is basically what gave rise to the idea of having this discussion that we're going to have on February 15th.
What questions would you like to see covered in this 1 hour that I'll be hosting? I ask you right off the bat. What issues, what ideas would you like to see covered?
Well, for one thing, you know, I think there's a threshold question as to what civility means. So we're going to have people that come from various different backgrounds, various different expertises, if you will. I'd like to get everybody's perspective on what civility means, what their observations are as to whether the tone has really gotten uncivil, and what some of the remedies might be.
Or is some may point out during the forum that really this political civility thing goes back to our founding fathers, that it's never been a very very friendly, conducive place for political debate, and maybe this is just a part of doing business in democracy.
Bill, that could very well be right, and perhaps what's changed is simply the nature of the interaction between media and candidates. But I think there was a discernible difference in this last election cycle in terms of just the nature of the debate and the harshness, as I said.
We're talking with Bruce Skolnick. Bruce is one of the attorneys for the University of Arizona, and he came up with this idea about civility, kind of a civility week. You're going to have some other activities as well?
There will be other activities, Bill, and basically they're all going to be lunchtime activities on campus, most of which are going to be in the student union on campus. We're still looking for rooms to conduct some of these activities in. We do definitely have a room for the political discourse discussion, and that is the North Ballroom in the student union. Other activities that we're anticipating that week are a discussion on the role of civility in the world of sports. We've invited the U of A's athletic director, Greg Byrne, to address that subject matter. We're going to have an on-campus speaker talking about cyberbullying, if you will, which has become a real hot-button topic, particularly on college campuses. And then a couple of my colleagues from the University Attorney's Office are going to be talking about the interaction between civility and the First Amendment.
Okay, we want to point out that the noon hour discussion that I will be hosting on civility and political discourse will be on Tuesday, February the 15th, in the North Ballroom at the University of Arizona. We're really encouraging not only all the Buckmaster Show listeners, but we really want the community to turn out, young people as well, correct?
That is correct, Bill. And I've been in contact with just about every local superintendent of a school district. We're anticipating up to about 100 high schoolers attending, and I think that's very important, frankly, because today's high schoolers are going to be tomorrow's leaders, and anything that they can learn about keeping the discourse at a civil level, I think is going to be doing our country and our community a real service.
That's the North Ballroom, U of A, on February the 15th. That's a Tuesday. Please come out, say hello, and enjoy the discussion. We have to go. Bruce Skolnick, thank you very much for being with us.
And thank you, Bill, once again.
CNN News is next on the Buckmaster Show.
Got something on your mind?
The time has come for all of us to speak out.
Call in and let us know.
Now start talking.
Talk about how you feel.
KJLL, South Tucson.
CNN Radio, I'm Bill Caiaccio. President Obama is asking people to pray for order in Egypt.
And that the rights and aspirations of the Egyptian people will be realized. And that a better day will dawn over Egypt.
The president spoke at the National Prayer Breakfast this morning. Egypt's new prime minister is apologizing for the violence in Cairo and says it's a catastrophe. The United Nations is evacuating a few hundred non-essential staffers from Egypt. Most airports are trying to get back to a somewhat normal schedule today after the big snowstorm. 14,000 flights were canceled this week. Two people died when a car crashed into an icy river in Miami, Oklahoma. Two senators are expected to release their report into the 2009 Fort Hood massacre today. Police in Las Vegas nabbed a suspect in the December robbery at the Bellagio. A guy wearing a motorcycle helmet stole about $1.5 million worth of casino chips. The most trusted name in news, this is CNN Radio.
AutoZone. AutoZone Rewards members. Now you can earn even more faster.
Get in the zone. AutoZone.
Now, earning rewards is faster and easier than ever before. Get a $20 reward every time you spend $20 or more just 5 times in 6 months. If you're not a member, go to your local AutoZone and get your free card and details today. We give you more value because we value you more. Now, shift your savings into even higher gear with the AutoZone Rewards card.
Get in the zone. AutoZone.
Are we there yet?
Not yet.
You think we'll be there soon?
Mm-hmm.
We're not lost.
When you head out on these long family road trips, you don't want to be in the car any longer than you need to. So I don't even start unless I've got the right guidance.
Turn left now.
I'm like that with taxes, too. TurboTax has a unique GPS feature that guides me step by step. It searches for every deduction and credit I deserve, which helps me know it's done right and gets me to my maximum refund guarantee.
Try it online now at TurboTax.com. Choose easy. Money back guarantee details at TurboTax.com.
Listed on the National Register of Historic Places and founded by Isabella Greenway, Arizona's first congresswoman, the Arizona Inn is still the standard bearer for luxury hospitality in Midtown Tucson, just minutes from the University of Arizona. Founded in 1930, the Arizona Inn continues to win top honors for hospitality and dining. Travel and Leisure magazine names the Arizona Inn one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. And the Arizona Inn is proud of its AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room. Whether it's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or a private event, you can count on Chef Allison's featured seasonal culinary creations to please. The Arizona Inn, a special oasis of hospitality in Midtown Tucson, 2200 East Elm, and on the web at arizonainn.com.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinca Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinca Verde and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tanca Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery, on the corner of Tanca Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
Coming up now on 35 minutes past the hour, for the first time since June of 2008, the stock market finished above the 12,000 level. Are happy days here again? Could it be? We will explore that question with certified financial planner Shelley Fishman. Mr. Fishman of the LPL Financial, located at Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Shelley Fishman is the host of a weekly financial call-in radio show right here on KJLL on Wednesday afternoons at 5 p.m. Shelley Fishman, welcome to the Buckmaster Show.
Bill, good to be here on this very cold morning.
Yeah, on this record-setting, frigid morning here. The markets aren't very frigid these days. In fact, we actually hit that 12,000 level.
Yeah, the markets are still over 12,000. We're 12,025, even though we're down about 16 or 17 points on the Dow this morning. I mean, we've had essentially a three-month run-up, and at some point, things have to take a breather. There's some profit-taking. Markets slow down a little bit. The fact that it's orderly. We had a bad day on Friday, and the events in the Middle East, I think, spooked the market a little bit, and the market recovered massively on Monday and Tuesday. So I think it's orderly. What we have is fundamentals that are looking so good that there's just no doubt that corporations are doing well. The markets normally are a leading indicator, of course, and I think there's a general recognition that we are coming slowly and surely out of this recession, and corporations have a lot of cash. Their profitability is good. We see that factories are filled. We've had increases in manufacturing for the first time in almost a decade. So all of that bodes very, very well.
You know, a year ago, if this turmoil had happened in Egypt, I think the markets would have taken a much bigger hit mm-hmm. than they've taken. And I think this might be the underlying fundamentals being now a little more secure. The foundation is a little more secure than it was a year ago. Is that probably why we haven't seen such a huge impact on the markets with the turmoil in Egypt?
Well, I think you've hit on a subject that is very near and dear to my heart. Because what is going on in Egypt is just a piece, it's just another symptom of what's going on around the world in emerging markets, in countries whose middle classes are now just beginning to realize that they are middle class, they have access to information and technology that they've never had in the past. And you know, what happens, of course, is as things get a little bit better, that's when you get revolutions, that's when you get turmoil. But What's happening in China, in India, in Egypt, in Brazil, is an emerging middle class that is a tremendous magnet for big manufacturing. And that's why we're beginning to see exports go up, why it is so important that in this country we begin to realize that those emerging middle classes can in fact be what carries us over into the remaking of our industrial manufacturing capacity. I mean, we've got to get into new things because ultimately even heavy industry will be exported and be manufactured overseas. But we've got, I'd say, 10 years where we can manufacture washing machines and heavy farm equipment and certainly airplanes and that kind of thing, and really boost our employment, boost our exports, and allow these middle classes to rise up in these countries. You will begin to see, I think, more of this kind of thing as countries begin to normalize and you get not just the elite, but also a rising middle class.
You know, I think you're on to something. Anybody who goes to Walmart or any discount stores are certainly sees that everything seems to be made in China. Mm-hmm. We're just importing just about everything. We don't make things anymore in America, do we?
Well, that's right, but they're small things normally. And of course, the Japanese, the Chinese, the Koreans are very big on manufacturing electronics. But there are things that we make here that we just have a natural advantage doing, and it's mostly heavy equipment and durables. And that's what we need to be exporting. I've mentioned to John on John's show that we lost a big deal to India. The Indian airline bought over 200 Airbus jets. That's not the kind of deal we can afford to lose. We need our government, we need our manufacturing to be really out there competing for that kind of stuff. And we're competing with state-sponsored corporations. Remember, the world has changed. Right now, you've got, it's not Marxism, it's not socialism, but it is kind of state-sponsored capitalism. And it's very difficult to compete with companies, with countries, and with companies and countries who don't have healthcare costs because it's handled through the tax base, who have very specific state directed economies, and the companies that do business in those countries are able to take advantage of all of that support and outcompete their, you know, less supported, less well supported competitors. I believe the Obama administration really understands this. Ian Bremmer's book, The End of Capitalism, really goes into tremendous detail about this. It's a must read for anybody who wants to invest in where the world is going.
You know, I've been following your talks on the John C. Scott Show. You're a regular guest on John's show, I believe, every Monday.
It's Monday. It's going to switch to Tuesday.
Oh, you're going to switch to Tuesday.
We've got one more Monday.
But I've been following what you've been saying with John. Certainly over the past year, you had predicted that the stock market would make a nice recovery. And I have to tell you, give you some kudos there. You were really right on at a time when many financial analysts were saying things were going south. You said, give this some time. We're going to go north.
Fundamentals, Bill. When you take a look at those fundamentals, there's just, you know, you would need such lack of confidence that it would have been overwhelming, and we didn't have that. We've got consumerism coming back. Remember, the consumer part of our economy is 70% of our economy, and when you have consumers coming back, and we've got a real problems here. I mean, we've got a middle class that has been really trodden down by the top 1 or 2%, and that dichotomy, that difference is huge. And the middle class has no more credit. I mean, you can't use your house as a credit card anymore. You can't use, your credit cards are used up. We've got to figure out a way to get more money into the middle class pocket so they can continue to spend. Otherwise, we could have a 10-year period like Japan had. But I think we're on the road to that.
In the remaining minute or so, I'd like to put in a plug for your weekly radio show
The
Buckmaster Show listeners. Tell us a little bit about the show. How is it going? I know your first show pretty much coincided when we launched the first week
and
of
January. And you were good enough to be a guest.
It was very much a pleasure on my part. But we launched, your show launched about the same time as we did here with the Buckmaster Show. How are you doing?
It's doing great. We had, last night, we had Karen Ulick on for the full hour, and also Leah Marcus Peterson talking about immigration. We're going to try to keep local co-hosts. Rather than do the show myself, I'd like to bring in co-hosts every week. We'll talk a little bit about politics, but mostly about the things that affect people's financial future. And that's why the show is called Your Financial Future.
Shelley Fishman, it's been a pleasure talking with you. The remaining 30 seconds, give us a little bit of forecast. Have you made your forecast for 2011 on the stock market?
I have. We're going to have less turmoil in the markets. I think it's going to be a flatter ride up to about 12.8 or 13.
Okay, Shelley Fishman, we will catch you on your radio show Wednesdays here on KJLL at 5 p.m.
Stay warm, Bill.
Thank you, Shelley.
Thank you.
Don Luce is next. Don Luce, the legal advisor to the Buckmaster Show. Lots to talk about with Mr. Luce.
Sarnoff Artist Materials is Tucson's award-winning destination for everything art-related, including fine and graphic artist supplies, framing, stationery, and the world's best writing instruments. Visit owner-operator, artist Henry Sarnoff at 2504 North Campbell, 3 blocks north of Grant, and always at the easy-to-navigate website, sarnoffart.com. Because it takes an artist to know an artist's needs.
Vero Amore presents Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza using fresh homemade mozzarella and the finest quality toppings. Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero Amore, casual yet upscale dining with an extensive boutique wine list. Vero Amore in Tucson at North Swan and Cap Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastro pub.
Are you up for the challenge? It's the third annual Boot Camp Challenge, March 19th. Join Olympic athletes, local armed forces, and celebrities as we laugh, climb, crawl, walk, run, and work out boot camp style through a 5K run-walk obstacle course.
To sign up as an individual or a team, go to beatcancerbootcamp.com or call 546-1601 for the Cancer Bootcamp Challenge, 7:30 Saturday morning, March 19th at Brandy Fenton Park. For strength, for health, for life, for fun.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinca Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinca Verde and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tinca Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery, on the corner of Tinca Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
Minutes past the hour. This is the Buckmaster Show, and I am Bill Buckmaster. We are joined now by attorney Don Luce of Luce, Brown & Associates in Tucson and Phoenix. Mr. Luce is the Buckmaster Show legal contributor. He's also the author of two very popular books. I own both of these books. I highly recommend them. Arizona Laws 101. It's a handbook for non-lawyers. And Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know. Two very, very important subjects. And Mr. Luce, really, he boils it down into you don't need to be an attorney, in other words, to understand what he's writing about. Don Luce, good to see you on this very frigid day in Tucson.
Good morning, Bill. It's great to be here.
Well, we've got a lot to talk about in the next 10 minutes or so. And state legislatures are convening this month, or actually they convened in January, but lawmakers across the country are now vowing to copy Arizona's strict measure cracking down on illegal immigration. But they are facing, Mr. Luce, a new reality, aren't they?
They are, Bill. State budget deficits. What they're realizing is not only is there a cost, a political cost, in enacting these types of bills, because there's a real possibility that the federal government will challenge it, so you have legal fees, but you also have the cost of enforcement. Somebody has to pay the police officers, the prison officials, and everybody else in the system to enforce these 1070 type of measures, and a lot of states are bankrupt at this point, and they've made the political and economic decision to put their copycat bills on hold for the time being. But there are 10 states that have drafted bills similar to 1070 that as recently as 6 months ago were talking about getting those bills through their system this year, and a lot of those states have put their 1070 type bills on hold.
Yeah, I mean, the legal challenge, they're just looking at the bottom line and saying, is it really worth it to bankrupt this state over this kind of a thing?
That's exactly right. And you'll recall that our own SB 1070 is now before the Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit. From there, it's certainly going to go to the Supreme Court. So not only are we looking at years before we have a resolution, but we're also looking at millions of dollars in legal fees just to get that resolution. Very expensive.
I want to talk a little bit about the marijuana legislation. We in your visit with us last month, we were touching on really the complications that are associated with Arizona's new marijuana law. And these complications continue to surface. For instance, patients who want marijuana won't be able to have or won't have to have visited their doctor four times during the past year to get the necessary recommendation. So that's something new. That's a change.
You know, this Proposal 203, which was passed in November, is subject to the Department of Health Services passing rules for its implementation. The interesting part about this, at least from a lawyer's perspective, is that the voters at the polls passed 203, just barely, but they passed it. And before it can be implemented, the Department of Health Services needs to promulgate the rules for the medical use of marijuana. And one of the things that they're debating now is how many times do you actually have to visit your doctor before you can get a certification that you're eligible for medical marijuana. There was a proposal being floated that you would have to visit your doctor four times. Will Hubble, who is the state health director, has said that they're not going to require that, but they are going to implement other rules requiring the doctors to essentially oversee their patients' use of medical marijuana. And remember, it's a fairly liberal law. Up to 2.5 ounces can be obtained every 2 weeks by a medically eligible patient. And the Department of Health Services is concerned that they don't want this turned into recreational use.
But that can be a real fine line when you're getting into that kind of amount, right?
Absolutely. And the Department of Health Services has repeatedly said in Arizona, we are going to do whatever we need to do to keep it a medical issue and to not allow it to become a recreational issue.
So the eligibility seems to be who is eligible to take part in this program still seems to be very much in flux and seems to be very fluid at this point.
Absolutely. Now, the proposition did specify that it has to be a serious medical condition. It did specify that the physician would have to issue a certification, and it did specify the limitation on the amount of medical marijuana that could be obtained biweekly. But in between, there are a lot of unresolved issues that the Department of Health Services is currently working through, and those will have to be finished before the law actually takes effect.
Coming up now on 52 minutes past the hour on the Buckmaster Show, we are speaking with Don Luce, attorney here in Tucson and up in Phoenix. Mr. Luce is the attorney for the Buckmaster Show, and there's lots to talk about when it comes to gun laws. Everyone's heard about this very well-publicized sting that the city of New York and Mayor Bloomberg, they carried out at a Phoenix gun show. It's really brought to light, really, so many gray areas concerning Arizona gun laws. What's your take on the gun law situation in Arizona?
My take on the gun law situation in Arizona is that we are only one of three states that allow people to carry concealed weapons without any prior training, permit, or other qualifications. And that is, I think, symbolic of the importance that we as Arizonans place on the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms. Other states don't share our view on the right to carry concealed weapons, the right to buy weapons at gun shows, for instance, without any background check. And so we're seeing a tension between, I think, the people on the one side who want to limit the ability of people to buy, for instance, high-capacity clips for their semi-automatic weapons, and the people on the other side who say that criminals are always going to find a way to get guns, and you ought not abridge our Second Amendment rights to bear arms because of these wacky people who go out and commit these horrific crimes. What I found interesting about the Bloomberg Task Force, the so-called Bloomberg Task Force, is that he's not targeting Arizona law. What he's attempting to do, from what I can understand, is to make a call upon Congress to act now to change the law.
Because they were not violated, his group that came out here, the so-called sting operation, they were not violating Arizona law, were they, at this gun show?
There's some question about that, Bill. There's evidence that they told the seller that they were not people who should be allowed to purchase the gun. So with that knowledge, there's a question about whether the seller should actually have consummated the sale. But other than that, no. There is no background check in a private person transaction. And gun shows, of course, are basically a collection of private individuals who are transacting private transactions with other private individuals. But what the sting, if you want to call it that, showed was that it's really easy to buy a gun. And the sellers at these gun shows, in some cases, maybe are selling guns to people that ought not be buying them. I think the Bloomberg investigation shows that this is something that Congress may take a look at, because Arizona wasn't the only state in which he hired investigators to go to gun shows. He hired investigators to go to gun shows in three other states, Tennessee, Ohio, and Nevada. So apparently he's attempting to gather evidence to present to the federal authorities to say, look, you need to step in and under federal law regulate this so that we have a uniform national system. Don't let the states make their own rules about who can carry weapons concealed without permits, who can't, and all of the various differences from one state to the other. And he may have some success with that because, quite frankly, this video was pretty compelling.
Now, gun dealers must conduct background checks, correct? Federal laws do not require background checks for the person-to-person sale of weapons by individuals.
Right.
But it does prohibit anyone from selling a gun to someone when there is, quote, reasonable cause, unquote, to believe that that person is not legally entitled to have one. So then it becomes, the burden becomes on the person selling the weapon, correct?
That's correct. And in the Bloomberg videos, apparently you have a purchaser telling the seller that he probably couldn't pass a background check. So that probably puts the seller on notice that this is a person that he ought not be selling a weapon to, but the sales were consummated nonetheless. And that's really the criticism. It's that these rules, even if they're on the books, are not being properly enforced. And in reality, it would be very difficult to enforce these rules given the environment of a gun show.
We had President Shelton of the U of A on the program a week or so ago, and he was talking about gun legislation proposed legislation up in Phoenix that would allow carrying weapons on campus. And he believes that federal law would supersede the Arizona law, and he believes that it would not be legal to carry a weapon on university campuses in this state. Have you any take on that?
Well, in response, let me mention that there is a Senate bill that is awaiting debate that would further expand the places where individuals can carry guns to include public buildings, and that's Senate Bill 1201. Now, what we're going to see, again, is the tension between those who say we ought to limit or restrict or otherwise shrink the ability of people to carry guns concealed anywhere in at any time, and the other side of the debate, which is, look, the Second Amendment gives every citizen, other than convicted felons or people who have been adjudicated mentally incompetent or prior felons, the right to carry handguns under certain situations. And in Arizona, that is a very broad right because, as I mentioned earlier, in Arizona, we don't even have a requirement that you obtain a permit to carry a concealed weapon. And, you know, only two other states are like us, Alaska and Vermont. So Arizona is one of three states where there is a very broad right to carry a handgun. And this SB 1201 is going to, the debate is whether we ought to further enlarge that to include public buildings.
All of this is going to be very much open for legal interpretation, just like the marijuana law. So I think that the attorneys are going to be very busy trying to sort all this out. So is it safe to say that we do have some of, if not the most liberal, gun laws in the United States?
Oh,
certainly. When it comes to concealed weapons and I guess other some of these background checks, very liberal.
Absolutely. Now the background checks are mandated by federal law, so they're the same from state to state. But other states require that owners of guns register the weapon, that guns not be carried in certain public or private places. Arizona is very liberal in those areas, and in fact, in most cases in Arizona, unless it's posted, no guns, you can carry a concealed weapon into a public place.
Attorney Don Luce, thank you very much. Very enlightening information here on The Buckmaster Show. Have a great day.
Thanks, Bill.
That's going to do it for The Buckmaster Show. We hope you do have a wonderful day. We will see you tomorrow on our Friday Roundtable. The guest will be Chuck Huckleberry on the Friday Focus. Then, of course, it's the Friday Radio Roundtable, 9 a.m. Friday mornings. Have a great day.
KJLL, South Tucson.